Welcome again to Mormon Land, the Salt Tribune's podcast about LDS teachings and culture. I'm Dave Noyce. I'm a managing editor here at the Tribune and a religion editor. I'm joined again by our senior religion writer, Peggy Fletcher Stack. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Dave.
With us today from Cincinnati is Jana Reese. She's an author, scholar, researcher, and senior columnist for Religion News Service, who has completed a massive survey of Mormons and former Mormons for a book due out next year to be titled The Next Mormons. Jana, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Jana, to get started and kind of lay the foundation for our listeners, tell us about this survey, sort of when it began, who was surveyed, and what you hope to learn.
Yes, so the Next Mormons survey was fielded about a year and a half ago, so September and October of 2016. And we wanted to have a really good-sized, robust national sample of Mormons to ask all sorts of invasive questions about their beliefs, religious behavior, political views. And we had, in the end, 1,156 Mormons and then 540 former Mormons as part of the survey.
So that gets you a pretty small margin of error, right?
Where'd you find these people, Jana?
So we hired a research firm, and essentially they use a panel matching technique to find companies of people who take surveys. This is a thing that you can do, which is take surveys and earn tiny gift cards over a long period of time. I started doing it myself just to see what the process was like, and now they know everything about me, including, like, lip balm preference. They want to know everything. But if you had ever indicated before on one of these surveys that your religion was LDS or Mormon, then you were put in a pool of potential people, and there were 22,000 people in that potential pool of survey respondents.
So what were you hoping to learn? What prompted you to do this survey, Jana?
Well, I'm very interested in research about millennials and religion, and there's been some really interesting research about evangelical millennials and how they're different, millennials in general about religion, and I thought it would be very helpful to know more, because anecdotally, I could observe, you know, some patterns that would suggest that millennials are different in their beliefs and behavior, but without actual data to back that up, it's only anecdotal observation. And it turned out that some of my anecdotal observations were wrong. You know, it's always better to have empirical resources.
So just give us a quick overview of a couple of your major findings that you are free to talk about at this time.
Right. Well, the reason that I'm a little holding some things close to the vest is that the book is not coming out for another year. That will be out in March of 2019. So not everything is available, but a lot of it I can talk about. I would say that the general thesis of the book is that millennial Mormons are more religious than other millennials, and they are very devout in certain beliefs. They are devout in some of their religious practices, but they are not as orthodox and certainly not as behaviorally rigid as older Mormons are.
So previous generations?
Right. Previous generations of Mormons.
Well, let's drill down into some of those and see if you can talk about these. For instance, we hear all the time that young people, including Latter-day Saints, increasingly are delaying marriage. Did your survey support that premise?
Yes and no. So you're right that nationally, millennials are definitely delaying marriage. In 1960, the average age for women was 20. It's now more than 27. The average age for men back then was just shy of 23, and it's now almost 30. So there's been a seven-year rise in the median age in marriage for Americans. We actually found that the median age for Mormons is holding steady at 22. Among those people in the survey who do get married. That's not the whole story, though, because the other part of the story is that in 2007, when Pew surveyed Mormons, We had about 12% of that sample single, and now we're up to almost 1 in 5. So we have more people who are remaining single, and that's going to eventually drive up the age of marriage, the median age of marriage.
In the January news conference, the new Mormon leader, specifically First Counselor President Dallin Oaks, suggested that Latter-day Saints who marry are more likely to stay active in the church than those who don't. Does your research bear that out, Jana?
Yeah, it does. And yes, there is definitely a gap. Our research showed, for example, that about 2/3 of married adult Mormons reported that they had been to church within the last 30 days, and fewer than half of unmarried Mormons. So there is a gap there in practice. We also saw at least a 10-point difference on some other areas of belief and practice, particularly religious practice. So Elder Oaks is right, and I think that he in particular is probably responding to a meeting that the Brethren had about 10 years ago, which has been posted to YouTube. Someone from the Mormon Leaks organization has posted this meeting. I have some feelings about that, but you know, I am grateful for the information. I guess that was a 2008 meeting, and at that time they found that young single adults in North America had a 30% activity rate. So 70% who were on the rolls were not active.
So you noted that Mormons increasingly are staying single, young people, approaching 20%, it sounds like. So, and if President Oaks is, and others, some of the other higher Mormon leaders are preaching marriage as a way of keeping Mormons in the church, what helps single Mormons stay active?
Callings. I think that, you know, the best evidence we have actually comes from Clayton Christensen, the business leader. Mm-hmm. When he had a calling in New England, which gave him access to all of the activity records for that whole area, he did some interesting poking around in those numbers and found that 17% of the single women who were on the church rolls were coming to church regularly or even occasionally versus 68% of the married women. So that's a huge gap.
Wow.
The gap was even worse for men. Only 8% of the single men were coming to church. But he found a couple of one district, and it had 6 branches, where married and single members attended at essentially the same rate. And so he was, you know, instantly intrigued and said, well, what is going on there that eliminates that problem for those branches? And the answer was that they were so desperate for people that single members of the church were given callings with great responsibility. That research really struck me, and I think that can be a signal for us going forward. One of the things that he said was that if you look around at the people who go to your ward council, people whose callings are important enough to mandate their presence at ward council, and you don't see any single people in that room, you have a problem.
Very interesting. So are millennial Mormons more likely to leave the faith than the older generations?
Unfortunately, yes, that is true. That is not unusual for the times that we're living in. We have right now a situation in America where 39% of millennials are in the category of nuns, not, you know, nuns with habits, but N-O-N-E-S, people who say on a survey that they don't affiliate with a particular religion. So this is the water we're swimming in right now, and Mormonism has not been immune. We are looking probably at the fact that we're retaining about half of our young millennials, and we used to retain 3/4 of older members. We used to retain about 75%.
So you refer to the nuns, like you say, N-O-N-E-S. This is a phenomenon that's happening to all religions, but is there anything unique about those leaving Mormonism?
That's a good question. Yes and no. Some of the reasons that they have said that they left are similar to the reasons that other millennials have said that they left their religions. So in that sense, Mormonism is not quite so unusual. I do think it's harder once you have left the church to reactivate, which is a weird verb. My editor pointed out to me it makes Mormons sound like robots, which is a point I had not thought of, but we use that language. I think it's harder to reactivate in our church because it's kind of an all-or-nothing proposition. You are either in or out. You are active or you are inactive. It is not a religion that you just go to for a couple of hours on Sunday and then you're done for the week.
Are there any policies or practices or teachings in Mormonism that are causing them to leave?
Yes. For millennials, the third most common reason cited for leaving was LGBT issues. And that was very striking to me because in other generations of former Mormons, older generations, that was not so much a factor. For Gen X, it was sixth. And for Boomer Silent Mormons, it wasn't in the top 10 at all. So this has become, you know, a civil rights issue of our time. And as one, you know, millennial put it to me, how we behave on this issue reflects a great deal on who we are as a people. Millennials are, I would characterize, less likely to be comfortable with the compartmentalization that some older people have perhaps been comfortable with, that it's one thing to treat people equally under the law, it's another thing to really welcome them into full fellowship. That doesn't make a lot of sense to younger people, not just Mormons, but to this generation. This is a generation that has been steeped in diversity. It is the most racially diverse and sexually diverse generation in recorded sociological history. And so they don't see things in quite the same way as predominantly white, older people might.
Do they cite the November 2015 policy specifically?
You know, we didn't have a question on our survey directed to former Mormons saying specifically, was that policy why you left? Anecdotally, yes, there are a lot of stories, and some of them surfaced in the interviews that I did for the book. One woman told me about how the day before the policy was leaked, she had gone and bought new garments, and she was someone who loved the temple, was kind of excited, actually, to have new garments, and then the policy was leaked, and the next day she went out and bought other underwear. You know, for her, it was a very decisive moment in her decision about whether she would remain active in the church. She, that particular case, still considers herself Mormon, but has not been to church in a while.
What about women's issues or historical issues? Have they had an impact on millennials?
Yeah, women's issues, I would say even more particularly. Just to address the historical stuff first for a moment, we have, I think, as a church, made some really good strides in the last 5 years toward becoming more transparent about history. The Gospel Topics essays are definitely an improvement, the Joseph Smith papers. All of those things are great. However, I wouldn't say that transparency about history or lack of transparency has been a really driving issue for millennials who are a little bit more motivated by politics and social issues in their religious decisions than older people might be. So that's kind of an interesting change, and it means that people thinking about making political statements, church members, church leaders, whoever it is, we need to think really carefully about what we're saying and to whom when we do that. As for women's issues, the second part of your question, yeah, Mormon millennials are more conservative about women's issues than other millennials. That much is really clear. They're kind of in the middle of their generation and older Mormons. But compared to older Mormons, they are considerably more likely to embrace what we would consider to be a progressive stance on gender. For example, we asked them, does it bother you that women do not hold the priesthood? And they could say they strongly agreed that it bothered them. They somewhat agreed. They strongly disagreed. They somewhat disagreed. And on that scale, only about a quarter of Boomer Silent Mormons either strongly or somewhat agreed that they're bothered that women don't have the priesthood. This is just not as pressing or salient an issue for them. For millennials, though, it was 59%. So basically 6 in 10 Mormon millennials. This didn't even include the former Mormons. Okay, this is just current Mormons who are still identified in the church. So 6 in 10 say that, yes, they are at least a little bit bothered that women don't have the priesthood. That's a change.
That's remarkably higher than, like, surveys, if I remember, like, even 10 years ago, which have been touted as showing, like, 90% of Mormons aren't bothered by that, Mormon women, so.
Well, but see, the questioning is different, and I think it's important. Mm. You're right that if you ask Mormons a question that says, should women have the priesthood, then the majority of Mormons, even a supermajority of Mormons, say no. But this question is about feelings. This is not about agitating for change. This is not about activism. It's just, does it bother you? And on that level, that very individual level, they say, yeah, actually, it does.
Interesting. Go back to the politics for a second. You know, Mormons have been overwhelmingly, reliably Republican for several decades at least. Are younger Latter-day Saints, sounds like they're not as conservative politically.
That's right. So generationally, we have about a quarter of boomer silent Mormons who say that they are either leaning or voting with the Democratic Party, so about 25%. And more than two-thirds of them are with the Republican Party, about 67.5% are Republican, and then we have about 8% in that generation, or the combined generation, boomer silence, who are independent. For millennials, though, we don't have that big gap between a small number who are Democrats and a large majority who are Republicans. In our findings, it was 41% Democratic, 46% Republican, 13% independent. And to have, you know, first of all, not a majority. Nobody got a majority in that scenario. We have 46%, 41%, two really strong pluralities. But it's the most politically balanced generation of Latter-day Saints.
Are they politically active? You may not have gauged that, of course, but...
You know, we asked some questions that Pew had asked before so that we would be able to have longitudinal data to compare that to. And one of them is just, I enjoy following the news. And no, millennials, by their own reckoning, are not as interested in that kind of engagement as older Mormons. I would say, though, that the timing of the survey, because we fielded this in September and October of 2016, it would be really interesting to find out if that had changed, because the 2016 election was a bit of a watershed in our country. A lot of people who hadn't necessarily considered themselves to be interested or certainly not activists found themselves interested and became more active. So I don't know if that would be true over time or not.
So people generally are thought to become more conservative as they age. Do you think that is happening or will happen to younger Mormons? Do you see any
Probably
indications of that?
No indications so far. But yes, there is a very good body of political science research that suggests that people do get more politically conservative as they age. Not by a huge amount, though. Not enough that would turn millennial Mormons as they now are into what baby boomer and silent generation Mormons are in being so predominantly Republican and conservative. What could change if we were to do this survey again in 5 years and found that a lot of millennials suddenly were affiliated with the Republican Party is not that actually these same people changed their political stripes, but that they left the church because they felt politically uncomfortable and are no longer in the current Mormon pool. Because when we are looking at former Mormons, they are not surprisingly far more considerably liberal and progressive on political issues than current ones are. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it may be a bit of a self-selecting mechanism going on over time.
So Mormon leaders are generally, at least as the church as a whole, quite careful in making political statements and certainly partisan ones. But when they speak out on issues that kind of polarize people along political lines, like, say, immigration or President Nelson's recent comment on gun violence. What's the message church leaders should look at when they look at you have young people who are much different than the rest of the faith, at least in their political views?
Mm-hmm. Well, my suggestion, not that anybody is caring about my opinion, but my suggestion would be that it's better not to make any political statements at all. And that may sound wishy-washy, but if there are going to be costs with every political stance, and I don't know that the costs right now are worth it. We are losing a lot of young people, and it does seem that there is a correlation politically in the kind of young people that we're losing, the ones who are not necessarily in agreement with the church's stance on social issues. Is it worth that cost to continue taking political stands?
So when the mission age was lowered, there was a surge of young missionaries, particularly young women. As I anticipated, that number, the total number, has leveled off. But does that indicate how high it was at one point? Did that indicate the young adults were more religious or young women were more religious? Do you know what I mean?
We have seen a great upsurge in missionary service. That was one of the most hopeful findings, I think, of the survey, and particularly, as you say, women. So with the Boomer Silent Generation women, only 13% had served a mission, and for millennials it was 44.5%. So it's tripled.
Wow.
Really, from, yeah, that's really astonishing growth. And men's service had also increased, but it wasn't quite so dramatic.
Did you happen to ask how many of the former Mormons were missionaries?
We did. And, you know, actually it was surprising how few there were. Maybe not surprising for people who studied disaffiliation, because the average age for disaffiliation is usually in the late teens, very early 20s. In our survey, it was 19, the average age of people who had left the church. Median age, sorry. When they left the church, it was 19. And, you know, that's the crucible moment in Mormonism where you're kind of deciding, am I going to stay on this path or choose a different path? And if you don't choose the mission path, it's pretty hard to get back on that path in quite the same way. So, yes, the retention rate for people who had served a mission and were still in the church was very high. But, like I said, a lot of people have already made that choice by the time they reach that age.
That's interesting that that your median age is 19, which, as you've noted, is exactly the missionary age, 18, 19, man or woman, you know, that can go. So
you, in your survey, you found some interesting stats about LDS General Conference viewing, and that younger people tend to watch it less. Why do they say that is, and do you have ideas about how the church could change that?
Yes, we definitely found that General Conference is not as popular among millennials. If we take the small number of Silent Generation respondents by themselves, 78% of them said that they'd seen General Conference in the last 6 months, and only 44% of millennials. So that's more than a 30-point drop between generations. You know, the typical General Conference viewer is someone who is older, who is married, who is living in a Western state, and who is white. Not surprisingly, the kind of speaker who is going to be on the screen at General Conference, that's the kind of viewer they also attract.
And so what could they do? What do you think? Or do you think, did you survey as to whether younger people watch it online or read after the fact or anything like that?
You know, that question was part of a whole series of questions about popular culture. And the way it was worded was, have you consumed any of the following popular culture things in the last 6 months? And ranging from religious things like LDS Church Conference, LDS Church videos, to pornography, you know, all of these different things. Animated movies was in there, sporting events, lots and lots of different things. And in every way except religiously, millennials had higher rates of popular culture consumption than older Mormons did. But religiously, in both of those categories, for General Conference and LDS Church videos, it was lower.
Hmm. So what could they do, do you think, the church leaders? Again, not that they're asking you, but we're asking you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, the model of General Conference is one that has remained very similar since, more than 170 years. Perhaps it's time to think about that model. We now have 10 hours on a weekend of people sitting quietly and simply listening, apart from the occasional hymn that you might participate that way. Other than that, you're just sitting there. And this is not necessarily a generation that has a lot of patience for 10 hours of passive listening in that way. Also, you know, there's such a limited range of speakers. There are no speakers that represent them age-wise. There are no very few speakers that represent women. You know, we have a couple in every general conference. And if you include women's conference in that, it certainly helps the ratio. But, I mean, let's face it, this is a conference in which we hear from elderly leaders, and they have a lot of wisdom to impart. But other people have wisdom, too. And also, I would say that General Conference does not exhibit the kind of authenticity and vulnerability that many people in this generation seem to prize, the idea of keeping it real. You know, I happened to be in Oakland, California this weekend and was surprised to find on Sunday morning that President Nelson was coming to speak at the state conference where I was also speaking in the building that night. It was, you know, total coincidence. And what struck me about the meeting was how real it was. The other speakers, especially this young woman who had been divorced and was talking about how her life had changed since her divorce and the end of this temple marriage that she'd kind of been taught would be the culmination of all her dreams, and her husband turned out to be abusive. And she stood up there in state conference in front of President Nelson and all of these people and beautifully, vulnerably shared her story. And it was wonderful. And his talk was also great. It was the most unplugged, unscripted I've seen him, and I really liked it. If we could have more honesty in conference, I wonder if we would also have more interest.
So you brought up the age thing, and maybe topics, I guess, could be an issue. So, I mean, it seems like the youngest person of a general authority would be in their 50s that they would hope to hear. So you believe that maybe allowing more young people to speak in conference, at least younger, even if they may not be general authorities?
Well, that would be wonderful. I am not optimistic that they would be willing to make that kind of change, to be honest. Hmm. I think it would be great, a real step forward, but I would be really surprised.
You mentioned that LGBT issues were like third on the list. What were the top two?
Let me just say that for all Mormons, the top five reasons were I could no longer reconcile my personal values and priorities with those of the church. That was number one. Number two was I stopped believing there was one true church. Three was I did not trust the church leadership to tell the truth surrounding controversial or historical issues. Four was I felt judged or misunderstood. And five was I drifted away from Mormonism. If you drill that down generationally, for millennials, the top thing was tied, like I said, the felt judged or misunderstood. Really, really important for this generation. And in a way that it wasn't for the boomer silent respondents. For them, that was all the way down at number seven. Also tied for first for millennials was I did not trust the church leadership to tell the truth. So more than any particular historical or doctrinal issue, you know, we did ask about those like seer stones or DNA evidence for the Book of Mormon, and those were way, way down on the list. But something like this, which is a more fundamental kind of all-encompassing trust issue, ranked very highly for millennials.
That's interesting that some of the historical questions that have come up the church has addressed in essays, largely because, or at least one reason, is because the availability of evidence online, and presumably younger people are much more involved online reading those, but the more personal objections are what, they found most troubling. When they say they felt
the issues themselves, like the First Vision or Seer Stones or something, even if those issues individually are not high on people's radar, the fact that the church is starting to be transparent and trying to present this in a church context to people is going to go a long way with those trust issues that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of the issue is when people don't hear about that at church, and maybe they read about it on Google and say, what? That's when you start having problems.
Mm-hmm. That goes to the trust issue, yes. So when they say they feel judged, what's meant by that? Do we know kind of anecdotally or at least examples of how they feel judged?
Well, there were numerous examples that came up in interviews. So I did about 63, I think, interviews with millennials for the book. And particularly women, this was very present in their mind. And, I was mentioning that to one person, and he said, well, why do women feel so judged? And I said, why are we judging women? this is not just a question of perception, but women are often very judged, and often women are judging each other. This is not just the case where this is all coming from patriarchy. Women participate in this system too. One of the stories that I heard that was a little heartbreaking was of two autistic boys who were kicked out of primary one day and told that they would never hold the priesthood because they couldn't sit still. That was painful for their mother and for other family members. A woman told me that she was getting ready to give a talk in sacrament meeting, and another woman came in from the congregation and covered her knees with a coat because felt that
the
woman was immodestly dressed.
Wow.
I mean, there were a lot of stories like this, and it's painful to hear them.
So, again, I hear we're asking you to look into the future, but what do you think the church could do to better engage Mormon millennials, short of completely changing all of its policies?
Right.
I'm doubtful about that happening.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of ideas of things that I would like to see. I guess they would be in two basic buckets. One would be the bucket of radical change. We start calling general authorities back when they're much younger, like we used to do. Thomas S. Monson was 36 when he became an apostle. Gordon B. Hinckley and Boyd K. Packer were both in their 40s. We haven't seen that in a long time. We haven't had intergenerational leadership in the quorum in a very long time. So a radical change would be to simply return to that precedent where we do have people from different generations who are not all elderly in the quorum. But there are other things that can happen on the grassroots level that can be much more just member-driven. And the first one always is listen to them without hoping to change their minds or change their behavior, without telling them they have to get married. Just listen. It's astonishing to me how little we do that institutionally in the church. And I think people do a great job often of listening to their own kids. But in church, we don't do a great job of listening to young adults and taking their views into consideration. We certainly would not go so far as to imagine that what they have to tell us should change our behavior, that perhaps we've been wrong or even idolatrous, and that they are issuing a corrective for us. So I would just love to see more listening. What are they teaching us? Another thing that I would say, and this is happening in the church, is to allow for uncertainty. Millennials showed very high rates of belief in our survey, so very strong belief in God, belief in Jesus Christ, Christ's resurrection. But when you put that on a scale of I am certain and I know that this is true, all the way down to I am certain and I know that this is not true, with various gradations in the middle, millennials have less certainty about those doctrinal issues than older Mormons do. just because they are less likely to say that they know and are confident that something is true does not mean that they believe it or that their testimony is in any way deficient. So I would love us to stop acting as though anything less than certainty is inadequate. So I'm really on a preaching roll here.
So hear a lot more, I don't know, we don't know, whatever, that kind of thing. So
yes, well, and have people who are older admit that they don't know. Mm-hmm. That can be immensely powerful to have a wise older person say, I don't have all the answers, and here are some questions that I've had. You know, on a personal level, I went to see a stake leader at one point a couple of years ago with a very pressing question, and it was the most beautiful thing I could have heard to have him say three words, which were, I don't know. Hmm. I was not in a mood to hear platitudes or lame explanations. I just wanted someone to hear my pain, and he did that. I hope that that happens more often in the church. Another thing I would love to see is that with correlation, we had this modernist paradigm where we believe that the church being the same everywhere, having the same lessons, having the same approach everywhere, was a virtue. For this generation, sameness is not a virtue. Individualism is a virtue, and when they are not permitted to express themselves individually, it's hard. It can be something very small, like telling all boys that they have to wear a white shirt. I mean, that's a very superficial thing. Or it can be something pretty major, which is there's one path to follow in life. You check all these boxes, and you will be happy. And many millennials will say, well, what about my neighbors? They look pretty happy, and they're not even Mormon, let alone following that particular path. You know, this is a generation in which pluralism is a reality, diversity is a reality, and you can't simply make these same assumptions about them.
So have you shared your conclusions with any LDS leaders, or have any of them sought you out or sought these results?
I have not personally, except on the local level. So I am aware that one person that I know had taken some of these results to a general authority. I never heard any follow-up on that, so I don't even know if it was read. But I think that data is empowering for all of us. You know, whether institutionally it ever makes any difference at all, it has been incredibly valuable to me to have this research. I've learned a lot. I've had some of my own ideas challenged, and, you know, I've had to think hard about where my own assumptions come from. And I hope that other people, when they read it, will be open to doing that too.
Well, maybe they're waiting to read the book, just like we are. So we're looking forward to that and reviewing all the findings that your research found. Jana, thank you so much for giving us a preview today.
Can I just add one thing?
You bet.
Which is, I forgot to mention the help that I have had from a wonderful person named Benjamin Knoll, who is a political scientist at Center College. And Ben has been instrumental in helping design the survey, interpret the results, read every chapter. So even though my name is the one that's on the book, his influence is all over that project.
So noted. Thank you so much. Peggy, thank you so much for your help today. We look forward to your continuing coverage at sltrib.com, and we'll catch you next time on Mormonland.